Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 474, titled Fifth Column, Part 5, being recorded on August 22nd of 2004. Remember Spitfire, www.spitfirelist.com, stock CDs of all the lectures and programs I've done over the years. I don't get any money from that. Also, on the Spitfire website in the For the Record section, there'll be a detailed, annotated, article-length description of this program within a week or two of the airing of the program. Be aware that sister station WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio, more recent programs streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older shows available for download only on Real Audio at a longer URL linked to both that address and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. Spitfire website, by the way, is equipped with a search function. It also has Real Audio. You can download the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile from the Spitfire website for free. And there's also a page to click on to support the work I'm doing. Listeners are emphatically encouraged to use all of the material, both printed and audio, from the Spitfire website to create their own database and to disseminate the material as far and wide as they can on the Internet. Now, we're going to be taking a look once again at what I believe is a fifth column, which is assisting in the subversion of the United States by what I call the Underground Reich. In our last program, For the Record 473, which listeners would have just heard, you heard the reading of a speech by the heroic John Loftus describing the evolution from the Muslim Brotherhood to Al-Qaeda, and basically that this is an organization spawned in the Third Reich that is now carrying on the work of the Third Reich. And John Loftus does not talk about an Underground Reich, which is fine, because otherwise he'll be pilloried as a nutcase like yours truly, but that's fine. The fact of the matter is, hopefully people in the intelligence community are studying this, and when you study the methodology of fascism, the Third Reich in particular, it always relies on a fifth column to weaken an opponent prior to an external strike by the formal military units. That's what brought France, a powerful military power, down so quickly. It is standard Nazi methodology, and we're going to take a look at the workings of what I consider to be a fifth column involving both American so-called neo-Nazis, other elements within the United States, and in particular, I think the point element of the fifth column in this country, the Underground Reich fifth column, is the Bush administration. New York Times article from Monday, August 2nd, 2004, article by Eric Lichtblau of the New York Times. Another FBI employee blows whistle on agency. It reads in part as follows. Dateline Washington. As a veteran agent chasing down homegrown terrorist suspects for the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Mike German always had a knack for worming his way into places few other agents could go. In the early 1990s, he infiltrated a group of white supremacist skinheads plotting to blow up a black church in Los Angeles. A few years later, he joined a militia in Washington State that talked of attacking government buildings. Known to his fellow militia members as Rock, he tricked them into handcuffing themselves in a supposed training exercise so the authorities could arrest them. So in early 2002, when Mr. German got word that a group of Americans might be plotting support for an overseas Islamic terrorist group, he proposed to his bosses what he thought was an obvious plan: go undercover and infiltrate the group. But Mr. German says FBI officials sat on his request, botched the investigation, falsified documents to discredit their own sources, then froze him out and made him a, quote, pariah, unquote. He left the Bureau in mid-June after 16 years and is now going public for the first time, the latest in a string of FBI whistleblowers who claim they were retaliated against after voicing concerns about how management problems had impeded terrorism investigations since the September 11th attacks. What's so frustrating for me, Mr. German said in an interview, a copy of the September 11th Commission report at his side, is that what I hear the FBI saying every day on TV when I get home about how it's remaking itself to fight terrorism is not the reality of what I saw every day in the field, unquote. Mr. German refused to discuss details of the 2002 terrorism investigation, saying the information was classified. But officials with knowledge of the case said the investigation took place in the Tampa, Florida area and centered on an informant's tip about a meeting between suspected associates of a domestic militia-type group and a major but unidentified Islamic terrorist organization who were considering joining forces. A tape recording of the meeting appeared to lend credence to the report, one official said. Law enforcement officials had become increasingly concerned that militant domestic groups could seek to collaborate with foreign-based terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda because of a shared hatred of the American government. This has become a particular concern in prisons. The Tampa case is not known to have produced any arrests, but Mr. German, in an April 29th letter to several members of Congress, warned that, quote, The investigations involved in my complaint concern very active terrorist groups that currently pose significant threats to national security, unquote. He also wrote, quote, opportunities to initiate proactive investigations that might prevent terrorist acts before they occur, which is purported to be the FBI's number one priority, continue to be lost, yet no one is held accountable. Before we continue with the article, let me just reread a short section of this story and read about what happened with Mr. German's attempts to get the FBI to pursue this militia-type group in the Pacific Northwest. But Mr. German says FBI officials sat on his request, botched the investigation, falsified documents to discredit their own sources, then froze him out and made him a pariah. That sounds like active subversion of this investigation on the part of elements within the Bureau. Skipping down, Mr. German, in his letter to lawmakers, cited, quote, a continuing failure in the FBI's counterterrorism program, unquote, which he said was, again quoting, not the result of a lack of intelligence, but a lack of action, unquote. Officials said Mr. German also complained internally about a second case in the Portland, Oregon area in 2002, in which he said he was blocked from going undercover to pursue a domestic terrorism lead. That case was also thought to center on a militia group suspected of plotting violence. In the Tampa case, officials said Mr. German complained that FBI officials had mishandled evidence concerning a suspected domestic terrorist group and failed to act for months on his request in early 2002 to conduct an undercover operation. That failure, he said, allowed the investigation to, quote, die on the vine, unquote. While Mr. German would not confirm the location of the investigation, he said in an interview with the office of his Washington lawyer, Lynn Bernabe, that his problems intensified after he complained about the management of the case in September 2002. He said FBI officials, whom he would not name, backdated documents in the case, falsified evidence, and falsely discredited witnesses in an apparent effort to justify their approach to the investigation. He cited institutional inertia even after September 11th. Trying to get approval for an operation like this is like a bureaucratic nightmare at the FBI, he said. Mr. German said that beginning in late 2002, he took his concerns to his supervisors at the FBI and to officials at headquarters in Washington, including Mr. Mueller himself, in an email message that he said went unanswered. He also went to the Justice Department's Inspector General and, frustrated by what he saw as a languishing investigation, brought his concerns this spring to several members of Congress and the September 11th Commission. In the meantime, Mr. German said, his career at the FBI stalled, despite what he said was an unblemished, unquote, record and an award for his work in the Los Angeles skinhead case. Soon after raising his complaints about the 2002 terrorism investigation, he was removed from the case. And, he said, FBI officials wrongly accused him of conducting unauthorized travel, stopped using him to train agents in proactive techniques, unquote, and shut him out of important domestic terrorism assignments. The phone just stopped ringing, and I became a persona non grata, he said. Because I wouldn't let this go away, I became the problem. For now, he has no job, and he is uncertain about his future. My entire career has been ruined, all because I thought I was doing the right thing here, unquote, he said. And more concerning the collaboration between domestic fascist groups and Islamist terrorist groups, including Al-Qaeda, something we've touched on in a number of broadcasts, and there are evidentiary tributaries running between the first World Trade Center attack, the Oklahoma City bombing, 9/11, and the AMIA bombing in Argentina. Interesting item in connection with the use of domestic fascist groups by Al-Qaeda or other Islamist groups. First of all, this article in USA Today of Monday, August 16th of 2004. This is a story by John Diamond and Tony Losey of USA Today. Non-Arab recruits scout for Al-Qaeda. It's Dateline Washington and reads in part as follows. Al-Qaeda allies are believed to be scouting U.S. targets, and the terror organization is using non-Arab recruits to avoid detection, U.S. law enforcement and intelligence officials say. The FBI has counterterrorism investigations in virtually all 56 of its field offices, but has not broken up a known surveillance cell, either because agents are tailing suspects who have not committed crimes, or because they have descriptions, but not identities. In that context, consider the following article. San Jose Mercury News, Wednesday, July 28th of 2004. In the National News in Brief section, we have the following wire service story from Iowa. Driver says he knows of terrorist plans. A driver stopped on an Iowa highway this month was found with flight training manuals, Arabic documents, and night vision goggles, and he told troopers he knew of terrorist plans to shoot up trains in San Diego, according to court papers. Michael Wagner, 44, of San Diego, said he had knowledge of terrorist activities and people in groups tied to Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. Wagner also said he knew about things in the Muslim communities in San Diego that would interest federal authorities. Federal prosecutors declined comment. Wagner pleaded not guilty Tuesday in U.S. District Court to being a felon in possession of body armor and weapons. Well, again, this is obviously not an article from which anyone can draw any conclusions. It raises more questions than providing answers. But Michael Wagner, obviously anybody can convert to Islam. It certainly does not sound like an Arabic name, but he alleges that he has information about Al-Qaeda and Taliban conspiracies in the United States. One can only wonder if he's part of some domestic fascist or white supremacist militia or something of that kind. Perhaps his last name should be pronounced Wagner. Who knows? He is alleged here to be a felon, a convicted felon in possession of these materials. One wonders whether he might be associated with the very deadly white supremacist prison milieu as well. In that same context, an interrogatory, a group that I've spoken about in the past briefly, is the Abu Hafs al-Masri Brigade. They've taken credit for some suicide bombings in Turkey. They also took credit for the power outages in the United States and the United Kingdom about a year ago, although authorities dismissed that, saying that those were the results of normal power outages or normal technological failures. At the same time, I've seen other articles saying authorities don't understand how the power outages spread so quickly in the Northeast. I have more questions than answers about the Abu Hafs al-Masri brigades, but consider the following also from USA Today. This from USA Today of Monday, August 2nd of 2004. This from the World section, group gives Italians 15 days to leave Iraq. An Al-Qaeda-linked Islamist terror group gave Italy another 15 days to withdraw its troops from Iraq before sending, quote, waves of earthquakes to erase your country, unquote, according to a statement sent to an Arabic newspaper Sunday. It was the fourth threat in 2 weeks against the country. The statement was by the Abu Hafs al-Masri brigades and sent to the London-based Al-Quds al-Arabi newspaper via email. Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has said that Italian troops would stay in Iraq until democracy takes hold. The brigade has claimed responsibility for a number of attacks on Western targets, including the train bombings in Madrid on March 11th. Well, at first reading, this would appear to be a metaphorical reference. Again, we're going to send, quote, waves of earthquakes to erase your country. On the other hand, Tesla-based seismic weaponry is a matter of fact. The U.S. and Soviets had a treaty on such matters on the books by the mid-70s. We've spoken about this in the past. And one of the questions I have, and this is a question, is whether perhaps some elements of the Islamo-fascist community, in particular the Muslim Brotherhood, which has access to many of whose members, I should say, are engineers, one wonders if they have access to Tesla technology. That could come in handy not only for causing earthquakes, but also for causing power outages as well. Again, I have more questions and answers about this. In an article in the August 2nd issue of The New Yorker, the Abu Hafs al-Masri Brigade is quoted an Internet posting as saying that it's very important that nothing be done to prevent George Bush's reelection, because, as they put it, George Bush is so stupid and also so religiously bigoted, such a religious fanatic, that his presence actually benefits the Islamist cause. The Abu Hafs al-Masri brigades would appear to be something other than your usual Islamist terrorist group. One wonders whether perhaps they might have some engineers in possession with Tesla technology. In light of the fact that the Turner Diaries involves the sabotaging of power grids, I wonder, too, whether perhaps the Abu Hafs al-Masri Brigade is an underground right group involving a collaboration between Islamists and Nazi-slash-white supremacist elements. Again, food for thought and grounds for further research. More about what I believe is a fifth column deliberately undermining the war against the Islamo-fascists and the underground Reich. This from the Yahoo News article by Matthew Pennington of the Associated Press. It's datelined August 10th of 2004, titled, Leak Allowed Al-Qaeda Suspects to Escape. It reads in part, President General Pervez Musharraf says Pakistan has been 90% successful in arresting suspects behind a series of high-profile terror attacks, including against key government leaders. Yet senior officials said Tuesday that some al-Qaeda fugitives escaped after news reports revealed the arrest of a computer expert for Osama bin Laden's network who was cooperating with investigators. Mohammed Naeem Noor Khan, a 25-year-old Pakistani, was nabbed in a July 13th raid on the eastern city of Lahore. His capture was a signal victory for Pakistan, a key U.S. ally in the war on terrorism. He led authorities to a key al-Qaeda figure and sent emails to terrorists so investigators could trace their locations. In an interview published in a Pakistani newspaper Tuesday, Musharraf hailed the efforts of the country's intelligence agencies. Quote, "We have achieved an unprecedented 90% success to unearth elements involved in terrorist attacks against myself, Prime Minister-in-waiting Shaukat Aziz, and in other high-profile cases," unquote, Musharraf was quoted as saying by the news. Pakistan has seen a string of bombings and suicide attacks over the past year, including two suicide bombings by Islamic militants that the president narrowly escaped in December, and another last month targeting Aziz, the current finance minister and prime minister-designate. Seven people were killed in the attack, though Aziz was unhurt. The attacks appear to have reinforced Musharraf's resolve to crack down on al-Qaeda, whose elusive leader has long been believed to be hiding out someplace along Pakistan's forbidding border with Afghanistan. Pakistan has arrested about 30 terror suspects in less than a month. But on Tuesday, two senior officials expressed dismay that the arrest of Khan made it in the media too soon, reported first in American newspapers on August 2nd, after it was disclosed to journalists by U.S. officials in Washington. Quote, "Let me say that this intelligence leak jeopardized our plan and some al-Qaeda suspects ran away," unquote, one of the Pakistani officials said on condition of anonymity. More about that same connection, and again, the subversion, perhaps some of it due to carelessness, some of it due to the politicization of the effort against al-Qaeda and the desire to get the Republicans reelected or elected for the first time this fall. But I believe that some of it is deliberate subversion, again, by a fifth column inside of U.S. intelligence and law enforcement. The following story is a Reuters story by Peter Graf, "Unmasking of Qaeda Mole, a U.S. Security Blunder." Expert, Stateline London, it reads in part, "The revelation that a mole within al-Qaeda was exposed after Washington launched its Orange Alert this month has shocked security experts who say the outing of the source may have set back the war on terror. Reuters learned from Pakistani intelligence sources on Friday that computer expert Mohammed Naeem Noor Khan, arrested secretly in July, was working undercover to help the authorities track down al-Qaeda militants in Britain and the United States when his name appeared in U.S. newspapers. Quote, "After his capture, he admitted being an al-Qaeda member and agreed to send emails to his contacts," unquote, a Pakistani intelligence source told Reuters. Again quoting, "He sent encoded emails and received encoded replies. He's a great hacker, and even the U.S. agents said he was a computer whiz," unquote. Last Sunday, U.S. officials told Reuters that someone held secretly by Pakistan was the source of the bulk of the information justifying the alert. The New York Times obtained Khan's name independently, and U.S. officials confirmed it when it appeared in the paper the next morning. None of these reports mentioned at the time that Khan has been undercover helping the authorities catch al-Qaeda suspects, and that his value in that regard was destroyed by making his name public. A day later, Britain hastily rounded up terrorism suspects, some of whom are believed to have been in contact with Khan while he was undercover. Washington has portrayed those arrests as a major success, saying one of the suspects named Abu Masa al-Hindi or Abu Isa al-Hindi was a senior al-Qaeda figure. But British police have acknowledged the raids were carried out in a rush. Suspects were dragged out of shops in daylight and caught in a high-speed car chase instead of the usual procedure of catching them at home in the early morning while they can offer less resistance. Security experts contacted by Reuters said they were shocked by the revelations that the source whose information led to the alert was identified within days and that U.S. officials had confirmed his name. Quote, "The whole thing smacks of either incompetence or worse," unquote, said Tim Ripley, a security expert who writes for Jane's Defense Publications. Quote, "You have to ask, what are they doing compromising a deep mole within al-Qaeda when it's so difficult to get these guys in there in the first place? It goes against all the rules of counter-espionage, counter-terrorism, running agents, and so forth. It's not exactly cloak and dagger undercover work if it's on the front pages every time there's a development, is it? A source such as Khan, cooperating with the authorities while staying in active contact with trusting al-Qaeda agents, would be among the most prized assets imaginable, he said. Again quoting, "Running agents within a terrorist organization is the holy grail of intelligence agencies, and to have it blown is a major setback which negates months and years of work which may be difficult to recover," unquote. Rolf Tophoven, head of the Institute for Terrorism Research and Security Policy in Essen, Germany, said allowing Khan's name to become public was, quote, "very unclever," unquote. Again, quoting, "If it's correct, then I would say it's another debacle for the American intelligence community. Maybe other serious sources could have been detected, or guys could have been captured in the future," unquote, if Khan's identity had been protected, he said. So again, is this being done to deliberately subvert the effort? One wonders. Still more in that same vein, this from the Los Angeles Times of August 11th of 2004, article by Jeffrey Fleischman. It's titled, "White House Has Some Terror Experts Worried." Subtitled, "Officials here and overseas say U.S. alerts and release of information could hinder broader investigations." Heightened terror alerts and high-profile arrests of suspected Islamic extremists have international security experts and officials concerned that the Bush administration's actions could jeopardize investigations into the al-Qaeda network. European terrorism analysts acknowledge that the U.S. and its allies are under threat by al-Qaeda, but some suggest that the White House is unnecessarily adding to public anxiety with vague and dated intelligence about possible attacks. Some in Western Europe suspect the administration is using fear to improve its chances in the November election. Terrorism experts say too much publicity about possible plots and raids of Islamic extremist networks, including the arrest of 13 suspects in Britain last week, could hurt wider investigations. American politicians have called for an examination of that contention. Officials in Pakistan reportedly said Tuesday that Washington's recent disclosure of the arrest of a suspected al-Qaeda operative, Mohammad Naeem Noor Khan, allowed other extremists under surveillance to disappear. "It causes a problem. There's no doubt about that," said Charles Heyman, editor of Jane's World Armies. "The moment you make any announcement, you tell the other side what you know. As a rule of thumb, you should keep quiet about what you know." And, still more in that regard, one of the things that we've spoken about in connection with the anomalous performance of air defense units on September 11th, and that is the PTEC firm. That's a high-tech firm with direct links to the al-Qaeda and al-Taqwa and Muslim Brotherhood milieu, and they were developing highly sensitive software, threat assessment software, for both the FAA and the U.S. Air Force. One of the things that we've speculated about is the possibility that PTEC software, again disseminated to both the FAA and the Air Force, as well as the Department of Energy, may have figured in the basically screwing up the performance of air defense units on September 11th. It has been the contention of some that there was some sort of stand-down order that was given to air defense units on that day. I can't say without qualification that that's incorrect, but in reading the account that I'm about to read, simply issuing a stand-down order would not have caused all of the problems with both the FAA, which is a civilian authority, and NORAD and units that are under the jurisdiction of the military. Rather, I would suspect that systemic failure, such as the type that could be produced by the Muslim Brotherhood PTEC software, might very well have accounted for the performance of those air defense units. Following column is by James Ridgway from the Village Voice. This is from August 2nd of 2004. It's called The Dayton Discord. And it refers to the Republican reaction of Mark Dayton, a Democratic senator from Minnesota, to the 9/11 report. "At long last, one member of the U.S. Senate has spoken out about the 9/11 report. Last Friday, during a Government Affairs Committee meeting, Mark Dayton, a Democrat from Minnesota, directly attacked the government for distorting facts and covering up what happened that day. Highlights of his narrative. Referring to the period between the first hijacking at 8:14 a.m. and the crash of the fourth plane at 10:03 a.m., Dayton said, quote, "During those entire 109 minutes, to my reading of this report, this country and its citizens were completely undefended," unquote. According to the 9/11 Commission's findings, FAA authorities failed to inform military command, NORAD, the North American Aerospace Defense Command, about three of the four hijackings until after the planes had crashed into their targets at the Second World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and the ground in Pennsylvania, which was not their target. NORAD then scrambled one of only two sets of fighter planes on alert in the entire eastern third of the country, one in Massachusetts and one in Virginia, but it didn't know where to send them because the hijackers had turned off the plane's transponder, so NORAD couldn't locate them on their radar, and they were still looking for it when it exploded into its target at 8:46 a.m. The second hijacking began, according to the commission's report, 1 minute later. NORAD wasn't notified until the same minute the same plane struck the second World Trade Tower. It was 5 more minutes before NORAD's mission commander learned about that explosion, which was 5 minutes after thousands of Americans saw it on live television. By this time, the third plane's transponder was off. Communication had been severed, yet it was 15 minutes before the flight controller decided to notify the regional FAA center, which in turn did not inform FAA headquarters for another 15 minutes, unquote. At 9:25 a.m. on September 11th, Dayton said, quote, FAA's National Command Center knew that there were two hijacked planes that had crashed into the two World Trade Centers, and a third plane had stopped communicating and disappeared from its primary radar, yet no one in FAA headquarters asked for military assistance with that plane either. NORAD was unaware that the plane had even been hijacked until after it crashed into the Pentagon at 9:34. The NORAD mission commander ordered his only three other planes on alert in Virginia to scramble and fly north to Baltimore. Minutes later, when he was told that a plane was approaching Washington, he learned that the planes were flying east over the Atlantic Ocean away from Baltimore and Washington, so that when the third plane struck the Pentagon, NORAD's fighters were 150 miles away, farther than they were before they took off, unquote. By then, FAA's command center had learned of the fourth hijacking and called FAA headquarters specifically asking that they contact the military at 9:36 a.m. At 9:46 a.m., the FAA command center updated FAA headquarters that United Flight 93 was 29 minutes out of Washington, D.C. 3 minutes later, the commission's document records this following conversation between the command center and FAA headquarters. Command center, do we want to think about scrambling aircraft? FAA headquarters, oh God, I don't know. Command center, that's a decision somebody's going to have to make probably in the next 10 minutes. FAA headquarters, yeah, you know, everybody just left the room, unquote. Well, note in this regard, first of all, the 9/11 commission has done its own share of covering up, but note and I've no doubt that incompetence played a role in the events of September 11th, but there's more going on here than just incompetence, and there's also, this is very important, there's all more going on than could be accounted for by the proverbial, quote, military stand-down order, unquote. FAA is a civilian authority, and there were too many people, including many civilians and civilian institutions, involved in this screw-up to be accounted for by an FAA, by a military, quote, stand-down order, unquote. And again, one of the things that I think needs to be investigated, because it has grave implications for the future, that is the possibility that PTEC software, and the FBI has been covering up the PTEC investigation as part of their subversion of Operation Green Quest. One of the possibilities is that PTEC software, which is also installed in the Department of Energy's computers, the Department of Energy handles the nuclear power plants, folks. This sounds more like some sort of systemic failure than a, quote, military stand-down order, which just couldn't account for the behavior of the civilian authorities and institutions. Anyway, that is my take on things, and there certainly appears to be a fifth column at work in many capacities in this country. That concludes For the Record program number 474, fifth column, part 5, being recorded on August 22nd of 2004. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.